It's 4 hours universal time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Dozens feared killed in bomb blast in northern Nigeria. Sudan denies reports. Woman in prison for apostasy will be freed soon. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Dozens are feared dead following a bomb blast Sunday in northeastern Nigeria. The attack occurred in the town of Mubi in Adamawa State. There's been no claim of responsibility, but suspicion has fallen on the Islamist group Boko Haram. The group has killed thousands trying to set up a conservative Muslim state in the north. It is also holding more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped from their village 7 weeks ago. Hundreds of Christians gathered Sunday in Abuja for a special prayer service for the girls. Chinwe Onorum Aruha was among them.
Everybody's praying for them. All churches are praying for them. And we're here to also pray. That is not the only challenge we're having, but it is like bringing out the gravity of this Boko Haram issue. Holding this more than 200 girls now for more than a month. I think it's heart-rending.
Last week, President Goodluck Jonathan ordered a full-scale operation to, quote, put an end to the impunity of terrorists on our soil. He vowed to free the girls abducted from Borno State April 14th. Sudan's foreign ministry has denied media reports a woman sentenced to death for refusing to renounce her Christian faith will be released soon following an international outcry. A spokesman says Mariam Yahya Ibrahim cannot be released without a ruling from an appeals court. Her attorney, El-Sharif Al-El-Sharif, insists she is innocent.
All we want to see an official court record or court order releasing Mariam from the prison, because we believe she did not commit any crime, whether adultery or apostasy, because she's legally married and according to the international agreement which ratified by the government of Sudan, there should be no apostasy crime.
Ibrahim sentenced to death by hanging last month after she declined to declare herself a Muslim. She says she was raised a Christian by her mother, but because her father was Muslim, Islamic law considers her Muslim. In Mali, the government and representatives of the MNLA Tuareg rebel organization met last week in what is seen as a preliminary step to kickstart peace talks following a failed military assault on the northern town of Kidal, in which the government says some 50 soldiers were killed. Here's VOA's Ann Look in Abuja.
Both sides agreed to a ceasefire. The question now is whether they can get to the table for definitive peace talks, something they failed to do last year as planned. MNLA spokesman Musa Ag Ateher took part in Thursday's meeting in Ouagadougou. He said it was a, quote, positive first step. He said they hope the unfortunate events in Kidal have shown the Malian government that this policy of burying its head in the sand does not work anymore, and that it is in their interest to respect their engagements, move toward lasting peace, and respect the ceasefire. The MNLA is the latest iteration of what have been decades of Tuareg separatist movements in the region. Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita says he will not negotiate any form of autonomy for the region of Kidal. Burkina Faso has been mediating talks between Mali and armed groups in the north since 2012. Ann Look, VOA News, Abuja.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta Sunday called for unity as the country marked 51 years of internal self-rule.
Terrorists, thieves and poachers threaten our lives, our property, and our national heritage. Our first defense is our men and women in the disciplined services. My government will stand with them.
Mr. Kenyatta announced the emplacement of cameras in cities and towns across the country and broadband connectivity at border points, as well as more police and security equipment to counter the kinds of attacks that occurred in recent months in Kenya, blamed on Somali-based al-Shabaab militants. The trial of three Al Jazeera journalists in Egypt, charged with endangering national security and aiding a terror group, was adjourned Sunday until Thursday. Outside the court, the brother of Canadian-Egyptian acting bureau chief, Mohamed Fahmy Adel, said the case is unjust.
This whole case is unfounded, should never have become a case or a trial. And it's becoming clear for everyone to see now that it's completely unjust.
Al Jazeera denies the charges, says the journalists were simply doing their job. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Peter Mutharika will officially be sworn in today as Malawi's new president.
There will be a military parade followed by handing over of the sword of honor, and then finally there shall be traditional dances, people celebrating that finally Malawi has a new president.
Nicholas Dayosi is the spokesman for Malawi's Democratic People's Party. Ugandan opposition leader Chisa Besigye endorses the findings of an opinion poll calling for presidential term limit. A new report accuses DRC government officials of using rape as a method of torture against politically active women. And Sudan's government says the pregnant woman sentenced to death for converting to Christianity may seek appeal 2 years after delivering her baby.
We know that in Islam, you cannot sentence to death a pregnant lady. She has to give delivery to her baby, and she has to complete 2 years with her baby, and after that is their sentence to death.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's Minister of Information. French police evict migrants trying to reach Britain, and a new study says obesity and overweight rates are rising worldwide. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Several African heads of state and government are today, Monday, expected to participate in the official inauguration of Malawi's newly elected president, Peter Mutharika, in Blantyre. Mr. Mutharika, a former foreign minister under his elder brother and late president, Bingu Wat Mutharika, promised a cabinet of technocrats in his administration during the election campaign. Nicholas Dayosi, spokesman for the Democratic People's Party, the DPP, tells reporter Peter Clotty that Mr. Mutharika will not persecute his opponents after promising to unite the country.
Today, Monday, President Professor Peter Mutharika will be officially inaugurated as the Malawi's fourth president of the Republic at the Afikamuzu Stadium in Blantyre. There will be a military parade followed by handing over of the sword of honor, and then finally there shall be traditional dances, people celebrating that finally Malawi has a new president in the name of President His Excellency Professor Peter Mutharika, who will finally take inspect the presidential guard of honor.
President Mutharika, whilst he was a candidate, promised to bring technocrats into his administration. How soon will Malawians and the rest of the world know when he will announce his cabinet?
I hope and I believe that indeed it will be a cabinet of technocrats. We want to move away from a period of mediocrity to a period of meritocracy. And that will be announced later, soon after the inauguration. Normally after inauguration, when you can see when there's an unveiling of a cabinet, that will be done. And then later we proceed with budget, parliament, and government business should produce it.
There were concerns that the president could still be charged for alleged treason. What happens to the case now that he's officially the president of Malawi?
The court will direct, I hope that was the simplest, political persecution of the highest order. And I hope the treason case falls away automatically. But yeah, then the court will rule that the complete discontinuance of the case. And I hope there will be reparation for persecution that we have suffered, endured. And we hope that it ends, we can close that dark chapter where there was quite an orchestrated and concerted effort to erase DPP by arresting, threatening members of DPP through trumped-up flimsy charges.
There are fears that the DPP, led by President Mutharika, could go after their opponents who are outside government at the moment, the PP, including Joyce Banda, because of the way they were treated. The president has called for reconciliation. Can it be believed that he indeed wants to reconcile the country, or he would want to go after his political enemies?
The president has also said he's not going to wreak vengeance. No retribution.
Nicholas Dowsey is the spokesman for the Democratic People's Party of Malawi. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Blantyre. Sudan's Minister of Information says his government will not interfere in the case of Mariam Yahya Ibrahim, the pregnant woman who was sentenced to death for converting to Christianity. Ahmed Bilal says Sudan has an independent judiciary which is dealing with the case. This followed media reports that Ms. Ibrahim will be released within days. Bilal says although Sharia dictates that a Muslim cannot change his or her religion, Sharia also says that a pregnant woman cannot be sentenced to death during her pregnancy. Bilal tells me there are several fatwas in Islam, one of which allows for an appeal that Ms. Ibrahim can take advantage of after her pregnancy.
I want to tell you one thing about this lady. The government has nothing to do. This is only a judiciary problem. Family of Mariam, or the family of Abrar, this is her real name, they have come to justice complaining of their sister. We have nothing to do. We have an actually free course in Sudan. And we know that in Islam, you cannot sentence to death a pregnant lady. She has to give delivery to her baby, and she has to complete 2 years with her baby, and after that is their sentence to death. This is not final. She has all the right to appeal. But from our government side, it has nothing to do with this.
Mr. Minister, the United States and other countries have called on your government to respect the right to freedom of religion, including the rights of someone to change their belief or their religion.
We are not going to interfere. And also, we have a lot of fatwas in Islam. There's some fatwas say that she wouldn't be sentenced to death. Some say this, and this is Sharia. In Islam, if you are a Muslim, you are not allowed to change your religion. This is Sharia. This is not the government. But in spite of that, I told you what Sharia said. No lady can be sentenced to this while she is pregnant. And after that, there is a lot of fatwas. She can actually appeal, and it's a long story. She will not be sentenced to this for sure. We think this is what the pressures with your government or other governments say, because this is only happens in Sudan, whereas this happens in any Muslim country other than Sudan.
We know that Mariam had a baby in prison. What can you tell us about the condition of the mother and the baby in prison? How are they doing?
Very good condition. She is in a very good condition. She has all the care. Her husband, her mother, everybody comes to visit her. She delivered a healthy girl, and she's in a healthy condition. And this continues on. She is going to be free till she have the 2 years with her baby. This is there. Secondly, she has all the rights to appeal to another court and to search for this. This is another also story.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's Minister of Information, he spoke with me from the capital, Khartoum. It's Monday morning, June 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A new report to be released today, Monday, by the human rights group Freedom from Torture accuses state officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo of routinely using rape as a method of torture against politically active women. The UK-based group says it treated 111 survivors from the DRC in 2013. Dr. Juliet Cohen is head of doctors at Freedom from Torture. She tells Ricky Shryak that their new report documents cases that occurred in the capital, Kinshasa, where women are being targeted due to their involvement in political activities.
All the women in this report are reporting quite clearly that it was the state agents who committed the acts of violence.
Can you give me some examples of what kind of impact it's having, and is it a lasting impact?
Yeah, I think the impact can be very long-lasting. All the women in this survey had a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, some of them quite severely affected by it. And those who've been raped report the overwhelming burden psychologically that that gives them, feelings of guilt, of shame, of feeling dirty, that they can never get themselves clean, profound feelings of worthlessness and low self-esteem, which can be very, very difficult to shake off. And, you know, that's in contrast to the lives that these women led before they were victims of violence, where many of them were independently economically active. They were businesswomen. They were, many of them, tertiary educated. They have professional careers. They report that they are afraid of men, are afraid of their family finding out what's happened to them, of society's rejection if society finds out what's happened to them.
Could you tell me a little bit about the extent of that sexual violence is used as torture?
Where, for example, in our Sri Lankan report, we had about 3/4 of the cases reporting sexual violence, and that was both men and women. But still, often the doctors report that they have a feeling that there is non-disclosure and that all the indicators are present that this person is a victim of sexual violence, and yet, despite their best efforts to facilitate disclosure, the person chooses not to disclose. Now, obviously, they can't say for sure that they're a victim, but there is that suspicion, and you just develop a feeling for it after you've been working in this field for a while.
I know there are a broad range in your report of reasons that are given for why these women have been detained or being tortured, but what are some of the more common reasons that they've been targeted?
Actual or perceived opposition to the government, or simply being implicated through the actions or perceived actions of family members, or they're being targeted to get information about the whereabouts of family members.
That was Dr. Juliet Cohen, head of Doctors at Freedom from Torture. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from London. The former leader of Uganda's main opposition party, Forum for Democratic Change, says any political survey done in Uganda should be viewed with some suspicion because Ugandans do not have the freedom to express their political views. However, Dr. Chisa Besigye says Ugandans have been unanimous since 1995 on the question of presidential term limit. This comes after a new opinion poll conducted by the Ugandan Daily Monitor newspaper found that 77% of Ugandans prefer the reinstatement of presidential term limit ahead of the 2016 presidential election. Dr. Besigye tells me the demand for presidential term limit is important for Ugandans because since independence, the country has never had a peaceful transfer of power.
The question of the desire for term limits of the presidency has been entirely unanimous right from the time the 1995 constitution was made. And you can understand why it would have such a unanimous support. It is because Uganda, from the time it became a country, it has never had peaceful transfer of power from one leader to another. Every leader has come into office with bombs, and every leader has departed being chased by bombs. And Ugandans are very anxious to have that cycle of violence end.
So, as you know, Dr. Besigye, 2016 is coming around. Where does the opposition stand in terms of how the opposition is going to approach the elections coming in 2016?
Where the entire political opposition in terms of political parties and civil society organizations, they are all unanimous in demanding for fundamental political reforms ahead of any other election. And this is, again, for the same reasons that I have just been talking about, that we have not had peaceful transfer of power. So we have to restructure the state in order to create independent institutions of state that can mediate political processes, so that then political parties can equitably compete for power. And unless that happens, any election is a fraud.
And so, Dr. Besigye, where do you see yourself? Do you hope to run again for the presidency?
I have, on my own part, as a person that has been contesting elections in the last 3 general elections, I have made it abundantly clear that I will never participate in any elections organized under the current regime of organizing elections, where you have the incumbent, Mr. Museveni, being a contestant and a judge at the same time, where you have the military being used and security institutions to fight for the protection of the incumbent.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the former president of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change Party of Uganda. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of New Jersey. French police have begun an operation to clear hundreds of migrants from makeshift camps in the port town of Calais. The migrants, many of whom are from war-torn countries like Syria and Afghanistan, are trying to stow away on trains and ferries bound for Britain. Henry Richwell reports.
Teams of riot police surrounded three camps housing immigrants in the port town of Calais Wednesday. The evictions had been announced a week earlier, and many of the estimated 800 migrants had already left. Local officials said there was an outbreak of scabies, and the camps had become a danger to public health. But representatives of non-governmental organizations say the evictions will not solve the problem.
Ça va être des personnes qui vont errer dans la ville, qui vont être dans un état de santé encore plus difficile.
Calais has long attracted floods of immigrants fleeing poverty or conflict in Africa, Asia and the Middle East. They hope to cross the 30-kilometer sea channel that separates France from Britain, where the migrants believe they will receive better treatment and greater opportunities. Many risk their lives clinging to the axles of trucks bound for Britain. Abdu is a refugee from Sudan.
My dream is small. Just I want a house and I want to some girl and this is my life. And I want to work and I want to learn. Just this is my dream. I don't want anything else.
Andrei Mehechich of the Office of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees says the migrants make the perilous journeys for different reasons.
For UNHCR, it's important to make a very clear distinction between asylum seekers and those that might be migrating for other reasons. And when it comes to the asylum seekers, the French authorities have put in place the special measures for those who seek asylum.
Mehechich says the number of migrants congregating in camps like this would be reduced if Europe agreed to a common asylum policy.
You have a situation across Europe where you have uneven recognition rates, where you have a different quality of decisions, if you like, across Europe. And from, for example, for Syrians, they range in Europe from barely 1% in some of the European countries to virtually 100% in some others.
The evictions come just days after far-right anti-immigration parties made huge gains in European parliamentary elections in both France and Britain. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A new study finds that obesity rates for both adults and children are climbing worldwide, with the greatest gain in weight in developing countries. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
According to the report by international investigators, the number of people carrying extra kilos climbed from 857 million globally in 1980 to more than 2 billion last year. Researchers report 62% of the world's obese individuals live in developing countries. The findings come from an analysis of data gathered from 188 countries in all 21 regions of the world. The study was published in the British medical journal, The Lancet. Investigators discovered the rates of overweight and obesity climbed 28% over the past 33 years. The biggest increase was in children. Almost half of all youngsters and adolescents worldwide are now considered overweight or obese. In developed countries, men have higher rates of obesity than women, although there's evidence that the pace of weight gain in the United States and other Western nations has begun to slow over the past 8 years. Ali Mokhdad is a professor of health metrics and evaluation at the University of Washington and co-author of the study. He blames the easy availability of inexpensive fast food for the obesity pandemic.
Nowadays, food is prepared for us. Remember, in the past, you know, it used to take some time to cook a dish. Now a child, 7, 10 years old, could pop something in a microwave. It's safe and it's readily available. could open it and eat it.
The authors found some of the highest rates of obesity in China, India, Russia, Egypt, Pakistan, and Indonesia. The healthcare costs of obesity, particularly to developing countries, are enormous, according to Mokhtad. Without targeted intervention, obesity control programs, and the sustained efforts of national governments, experts say it's unlikely countries will meet the United Nations goal of halting the rise in obesity rates by 2025. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Sudan's El Ahli Shandi dismissed South Sudan's Malakia 3-0 as Uganda's Victoria University pipped Tanzania Mainland's Mbeya City 1-0 in Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Nile Basin Tournament quarterfinal action on Saturday. Earlier on Friday, Kenya's AFC Leopards edged Ethiopia defense 3-2, while Burundi's Academy Chite squeezed a 3-2 post-match penalty shootout victory over Sudan's El Merrek after they tied 1-1 in open play. Today, Monday, AFC Leopards play Academy Chite and Victoria University face El Ahli Shandi in the semifinals. Meanwhile, Tanzania held host Zimbabwe to a 2-2 draw in Harare to progress on a 3-2 aggregate in Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers on Sunday. Benin dismissed Sao Tome and Principe 4-0 on aggregate as Lesotho edged Liberia 2-1. Although Malawi and Chad tied 3-3 on aggregate, Malawi progressed on their away goal rule. Guinea-Bissau beat Central African Republic 3-1. Botswana pipped Burundi 1-0. Sierra Leone edged Swaziland 2-1. Equatorial Guinea beat Mauritania 3-1, while Uganda and Madagascar tied 2-2. Uganda advanced on their away goal rule. Kenya edged Comoro Islands 2-1. Congo-Brazzaville eliminated Namibia 3-1. Rwanda beat Libya 3-0, and Mozambique overpowered South Sudan 5-0. In Nigeria, FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions Nigeria beat their Egyptian peers 3-1 in a second friendly played in Kaduna City, Kaduna State, North Central Nigeria on Friday. The Nigerians had earlier edged their visitors 3-2 in their first encounter. Turning to athletics, Botswana's Olympic silver medalist Nigel Amons clocked 1 minute and 43.63 seconds to win the 800 meters at the IWF Diamond League in Eugene, Oregon State, USA on Saturday. Djibouti's Ayanla Suleiman triumphed in the 1 mile as Kenyans Caleb Mwangangi Ndiku, Helen Onsando Obiri, and Mercy Cherono prevailed in the men's 5,000 meters, women's 1,500 meters and 2 miles respectively. Ethiopian Sophia Sefa triumphed in women's 3,000 meter steeplechase, while Nigerian Blessing Okagbare was runner up in 200 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sudan's foreign ministry is denying media reports that a woman sentenced to death for refusing to renounce her Christian faith will be released within days following an international outcry. Foreign ministry spokesman Abubakar Al-Siddiq says Mariam Yahya Ibrahim cannot be released without a ruling from an appeals court. That's it for this Monday, June 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you make this week a very productive one.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. This coming Monday on Let's Talk Tattoos. Tattoos is a topic we'll discuss in our new light-hearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore tattoos with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk, Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on the Africa service of the Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.